Session number 17681, Reel 3.
Colonel Robbins, Reel 3.
When you're an adjutant, you are on what's called a command set, back to brigade headquarters and forward to companies on the 41 set. I think it was 41 or 42. And those were very heavy sets which had to be man-packed by the infantry, with a number two carrying spare batteries. They also had to carry their rifles. Tough job. Very good chaps in the single platoon. Usually the 41 set worked very well. It had to. The 38 set, which was a much smaller one, carried within the platoon a quarter of the weight, but they only went 200 or 300 yards, sometimes 800 if you were lucky. But the 41 set was a much better one.
It sounds as though the main problem you might have had in that command post might have been knowing to what extent you felt free to give answers without constantly referring to the CO.
One mustn't do that. You can't worry the CO. If he's sitting beside you or asking you something, he would probably take that set and answer it himself. Now you are just there to back him up and to know the whole plan of the battle. And anything can go wrong in a battle. Therefore, if, say, A company on the right has been overrun, commanding officer is not there, you must just put that situation across to whoever needs to get it, i.e., brigade might like to know there's a heavy attack coming in on the left. The gunner officer, the gunner battery commander is next to you in that command post. He is in close consultation about what do I put down here? Shall I let them have the works? Etc. It's the drill of coordination which one had practiced over several years. No excuse for it to go wrong, and it did not.
And after the Battle of Malto?
After the Battle of Malto, I was very glad to go into reserve, and gladder still to be told by the commanding officer, I do not wish you to be my adjutant any longer. And I said, why, am I going on leave? He said, no, you're going to command a company, which as I told you earlier, pleased me greatly. I went to command a company because in this Battle of Malta, the company commander concerned had been shot and wounded, and he was carried off. And he was one of these chaps who carried a hunting horn into battle with him, and he blew this hunting horn to rally his men. Blowing it saved his guts because he was lying next to a wounded German who had shot him, and he'd shot the German in this wooded part, and he was found with this by blowing this horn.
Which company was it?
C. So I took that, and I think it was I was starting to wonder when Colonel Corbine joined us as second in command. No, he was a brigade major in another brigade. He came and joined us later when our second in command went. But after the Battle of Malto, things began to look as if we might break out from Normandy, break out of the bridgehead. And we did. And I remember on the 4th of August, that's July, two, three months we'd been there. We suddenly had orders, because the Germans had withdrawn, to advance, to contact. Another phase of war which we had practiced. And we had tanks, we had the 13th, 18th Hussars supporting us, and our guns, and in that area you can't put troops into three tunnels going into advanced contact. Therefore, they go on more lighter vehicles, carriers and so on. On this occasion, my company, as the leading company for this advance, were all put onto the tanks of the 13th, 18th Hussars, which had Sherman tanks, which 88 millimeters went through like a pat of butter. And it's very uncomfortable traveling on a tank. I was in my carrier, in my jeep, open jeep, and that's how we went. And we went for 14 miles without seeing a German. Holed up for the night, and at dawn next day, pushed on. As we got towards nearing our objective, which was a place, the highest point in Normandy, called Mount Pinson. This was a mountain. I don't know how high it was, really. Might have been 800 feet, I don't know, 1,200 feet. But from it, it had a complete view of Normandy. That is why the Germans wanted it. And in Kent, when we had been briefed by Montgomery, he had said on the map, this is the key point of Normandy, Mount Pinson. Little did we know that our division would be ordered to attack it and capture it. An honor. And I was told we had Fourth Wiltshire's on the right road, Fifth Wiltshire's on the left, Somerset's behind. And I was a leading company on the right with this squadron of tanks. And that, on the dawn of the 5th of August, I remember going along and the tanks slowed up. What is the matter? Movement had been seen on the hill 2,000 yards away, German tanks. They, therefore, got off the road. Colonel Lewis came and said, what God's name is going on? The essence of this thing is speed. Get on. We'd rather wait. We think that we may be open fire on any minute, because 2,000 yards is nothing to an 88 millimeter tank gun. Luce said, all right, if that's the way it is, C Company, that's me, get on. Get on and capture that point you've been told to capture, which was the village of Saint Jean le Blanc on the right-hand shoulder of this mountain. And that was the divisional commander's aim, to go right hook and capture it up the hill. So we went on foot, fast. They were trained to do it. The tanks, the German tanks, did not all open fire. We got to this little river. The bridge had been blown. We waded the river. The tanks couldn't have got across. No vehicles could get across. Somehow I got my jeep across. It was, I suppose, 20 feet, 30 feet wide. Not terribly deep. Whether over the broken bridge or not, I don't know. But my mind was on the objective, which was a hill, a village on a hill. A Company was on the right, C Company on the left, I was C Company, and up we went. And immediately we got halfway up, the firing started. Rifles, machine gun. Which meant one had reached contact at last after you know, 2 days and 20 miles. Here was the position. We knew it was the position, of course, very strongly held. And that is where I needed my tanks, but they couldn't get across. So I did the normal infantry attack, one platoon right, two up and one back. I'm in the middle. And when we got farther up this hill, we got into a rather large farm, and that was being held with strength, more than the company. And that is where I had a battle which lasted all day. All day. No food. All my platoon commanders were knocked out, killed. I saw one killed 20 feet from me. NCOs were being knocked out. There was one lance corporal took hold of, he had to run one of the platoons, a lance corporal. And I remember him seeing him run, gather what was left, and mount a little counterattack and charge into the German position. SS, I think he was SS, German officer was doing exactly the same thing from the other way. They met. We won, and those were the little sort of battles that were going on the whole way. This lance corporal had given me a lot of trouble in England. I knew him well. He was a boxing, in our boxing team. He was a Welshman. I loved him. I made him a platoon commander on the spot, promoted him, and he commanded that platoon till he died in Holland or Germany.
What kind of trouble had he caused?
Naughty. Getting drunk, punching chaps senior to him, not obeying orders, going absent without leave. Nothing dishonest. Just a typical badly behaved Welshman who I loved. And he knew it, that so-and-so. He took advantage of this. But I had to punish him more than once. Those are the chaps who make it. Anyway,
he'll make it a soldier.
He made my company. He was an example. And so there it was. It was a summer day, 6 p.m. Still fighting. I was firing, I don't know, anti-tank guns into this one. We were in the buildings by then. And at last, they built a little bridge over the river, and up came some of my tanks from the 13th, 18th. And that was the final thing. The Germans had withdrawn theirs, and the support of these tanks finished the battle, and the Germans withdrew, leaving dead, lying all over the place. Strangely, in this particular battle, no German gave up. Some withdrew, most stayed to be killed. There were British dead lying about, German dead. They took away a lot of their dead. And I said, well, quickly, we'll take up our positions here, dig in. We didn't know what the plan was. We hadn't had any instructions. Clearly, the other company on the right had had a similar battle, and we had bumped opposition, which meant to hold us up. I said to, while the troops were digging in and burying one or two of our chaps, I said to my young gunner officer, they always had a gunner with you, let us go forward and sight a position for your OP. Because the Germans are bound to counterattack. So we went forward. This young officer, I remember, had a German Schmeisser which he'd captured around his neck. And I had my binoculars, I'm not sure, I didn't have a walking stick. But as we came round a corner of a hedge, we bumped into two Germans, sentries, outposts, up with their weapons. I, being a good infantry officer, couldn't find my weapon. It was in my pouch, or I was looking at my map. This boy shot these two. This gunner shot these two before they could say knife. We looked down there, we saw the Germans forming up, maybe 100 or two tanks, ready to come counterattack, which is the right rule. Without hesitation, he got on his set, got back to the guns behind us, correct map reference, and the guns came down within 4 minutes. That's the sort of training we'd reached. That put a stop to that. Anyway, we got back, dug in, and no food, you see, since 4 o'clock when we had a meagre breakfast. It was now 10 o'clock at night. Orders came through that the attack was going to take another, put in on another flank. We were to withdraw. Withdrawal in battle is one of the most difficult phases to do without panic. The Germans were still worrying us. Dark. I put my orders out, and there are, when you withdraw, the officer comes out last, and you have certain checkpoints. And this drill worked all right. This young, rather interesting thing, this young officer, a gunner, was on one of my checkpoints. And as the soldiers went past, he handed them a biscuit with a slab of bully on it, which he'd had from his own rations in his tank for his own crew, and a quick swig of water if they wanted it. It's all they had. Little did they know they were not going to get anything the next day either. And the operation went down. We withdrew. I got back to the battalion, which was 2 miles back, black. The Germans, as we left the village, so they crept in, took up. Last day. When I got to battalion, the mortar platoon commander, who was a great friend of mine, said, may I please have back my 2 mortar sergeants that I positioned with you for this battle? Certainly, I said, Sergeant Major, tell those to them. Sergeant Major said, I'm sorry, sir, I can't find them. We had left them in this German position, which was now a German position. Sergeant Major said they were asleep, I think. It was a terrible thing. This captain didn't hesitate. He had a motorcycle. He knew exactly where I was because he'd visited me all day. He went up, back into that occupied village, hid his motorcycle at the bottom, crept up, got, it was pitch dark, of course, shook these two men quietly, put his hand over their mouths so they wouldn't, crept back with them, put 3 of them on this motorcycle at the bottom of the hill and saved them. I put him in for a decoration, but he never got it. Those are the sort of little things that were happening. And that battle went on because it was then dawn. We were put into a concentration area. Breakfast was being served. And what we didn't realize was that concentration area was being observed by the Germans from the village just above us, who brought down all their guns on us. Breakfast was blown up. No one had any breakfast. Several officers and men in D Company were cut to ribbons. I had more casualties. I'd already had 3 officers and 19 men, which is quite a lot when you've only got a company of about 80 fighting. And we were withdrawn out of this orchard, and had to march then 11 miles to the other flank, and so this battle went on. Meanwhile, my fifth Wilches, my old battalion, had been fighting a tremendous battle in the centre. They lost. The commanding officer, they were held up on a river, crossroads and river. The commanding officer said, "You've got to get on, cross this bridge." I remember it was Minden Day. He had come from another regiment. He put a rose in his hat, swinging his walking stick, he crossed the bridge with his battalion headquarters. Stupid thing. He was shot straight to the chest immediately. The padre was with him, he was shot. Most of battalion headquarters shot. Germans astonished. Troops encouraged to such an extent that they charged over on either side and got across. Company commanders being killed. One of my best friends, the adjutant, had his arm shot. He had to take command of the battalion because no one seemed to be left. And they held. Out of 500 or 600 men, at the end of that little effort, which was a pivot of the whole battle, I think about 90 or 100 came out. Big casualties. And that night, we, who had been fighting on the other side, were pushed through this lot, who couldn't go any farther. And we went in the dark up this hill, somehow got to the top. The tanks of the 13th, 18th had also got to the top, unhindered, and we took up our position up there. The hill of Normandy was captured, Mount Pinson. We didn't realize, but it was so. But those Germans had only withdrawn 50 yards down to the reverse slope. We could hear them digging in. We dug in. But we were so tired, and don't forget, we hadn't fed for 2 or 3 days. So tired, we went to sleep on our shovels, practically. We got in. Next morning at dawn, I said to Sergeant Major, who was with me, "Wake those damn signalers up and get on to battalion headquarters, next trench." He went across, he said, "They're not there." I said, "But I spoke to them last thing. Their sets are there. They are not there, sir." What had happened was that these Germans had sent a patrol through and quietly captured these two men and taken them back. We never saw them again. I think they killed them. We never recovered them after the war. 5 yards to the left, he'd have had Sergeant Major and me. We were so tired. That was the battle. And the next day, we were told the battle was won, although the Germans were still counterattacking all round this enormous hill. But still we'd won, and we were replaced by another battalion. And the second in command went and commanded something else, and that is where John Corban was sent at the end of August to be our second in command. And that was the end of the Normandy thing, because then the Falaise Gap affair happened shortly after that, which we played our part in achieving. And so the battle became fluid. And again, the Wiltshires were sent down with the division and were the first to cross the River Seine.
But were you wounded in Normandy?
Yes, I was wounded very slightly. I had just a hand wounded. I was in bed, but I wasn't sent back to hospital.
Was that in Mont Pinson?
No, it was It was after Mount Pence. Oh, wait a minute. It was just before Mount Pence. No, after Mount Pence. It's so confused. It's after Mount Pence while we were driving them out on to Falaise. Yeah.
How did it happen?
Mortar bomb exploded very near me.
But you weren't pulled out?
No, I just saw the MO later when I could after this battle. What happens, you see, is they put whoever's near you, your own first aid chap, stretcher bearer, usually has some medicine with him, and bandages and morphine if you want it, and gives it to you. And you either are no good to fight or you stay on. I certainly was not knocked out with just a hand. So I stayed. And then when there was a break, I would say the next day I was able to go back to the MO. So thankfully the MO came up.
So then you push on through France to the
Then we had this great rush through France to the River Seine, where again the Germans held us up a bit, and where we had to attack, more casualties. And then we got across, and the British Army went through us, and we had a week's rest while they charged up. Then we followed on. And during that week's rest, we liberated a small village called Giverny on the other side of the Seine. And that was where my battalion was. We discovered the battalion headquarters was a small village, was in a large house with a lovely garden. It was the house of Monet, the painter. My colonel's wife is a great artist, and he wrote and told her that Monet's house, there were lots of pictures there, and everything. And the Germans, strangely, had not looted this house. Maybe they didn't realize that he was such a great artist. And Luce said, "I do not want even a paintbrush taken from this house." And we didn't take anything. That's just a side. The sort of small thing that happens during such occasions. And then we went on. Long, long drive up to Brussels. And then we were briefed on Operation Market Garden, which was, of course, the battle for Arnhem, which again we were 30 corps leading, Guards Armoured, 43 Division. We thought the war would end. Monty said it would end. But it was really